This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hi, I'm Dave King. This is The North This Week. What do sailors, prison inmates, motorcycle gangs, and the Inuit have in common? A long-standing tradition of tattoos. Although in the case of the Inuit, some traditional tattoos died out decades ago, like the facial tattoo. Well, on today's program, we're going to meet a woman making a documentary about Inuit facial tattooing and her plans to receive one. When she gets her facial tattoo this coming spring, she will be the only known living Inuit to have one. And we'll find out why she's made this radical decision a little later on in the show. Believe it or not, we are also going to get the ABCs and Ds of proper bra fitting a little later on. It's all part of the festivities here in Whitehorse to celebrate breast health programs as part of Breast Health Awareness Month in the North. But first, it's been another difficult week for the people of Hay River in the Northwest Territories. It's been just 3 weeks since RCMP Constable Chris Warden was shot and killed in their small town. Warden was 30 years old, a husband and a father of a four-month-old daughter. The Edmonton area man accused of shooting him is believed to have been involved in the cocaine trade. And now people in Hay River are hoping that maybe this tragic loss could be a wake-up call for the community. The CBC's Richard Gleason brings us this story from Hay River.
A little more than a week after Christopher Warden was gunned down, children play in a schoolyard a few hundred meters from where he was found. For the first few days after the shooting, a hush fell over the community as people tried to comprehend how such a thing could happen in their town. Now, life is getting back to normal in Hay River. But a lot of people here are saying normal is no longer good enough. Beatrice Lapine is an outspoken woman who served as a justice of the peace for 10 years. She talks over tea at the Boardroom, a local restaurant.
We need to do more. I think we heard at that prayer vigil over at the site where Constable Warden's body was found that many people stood up and said it's time to make a stand for our community. It's time to take it back from the drug dealers. And I think people are very sincere in wanting to see some changes. I think we have to stop turning a blind eye, otherwise more people will be killed.
The murder of the RCMP officer is drawing attention to problems that have existed here for years. Drugs, children left to roam the streets late at night, excessive drinking. They're problems common to almost every small northern community. Beatrice Lapine says ignoring them or viewing them as exclusively police problems isn't the answer.
I think I learned when I was a JP the extent of criminal drug activity there was in our community and also the links to drug gangs and organized crime in the South. In the past, it was sort of like a slow cancer and nobody paid much attention to it. Now it's escalating into a major problem for us and resulted, I think, for the most part, in the loss of Constable Warden.
Christopher Warden was shot in one of the most neglected neighborhoods in town. Across the street from where his body was found is a cul-de-sac of tiny one-and-a-half-story homes with small fenced yards. Though it's a neighborhood of public housing, the public doesn't seem to be paying much attention to it. The dingy white houses haven't been painted in years. There are holes in the chain-link fences between the yards behind each house, holes that young people use as shortcuts as they chase one another during the night. A woman who lives in one of the houses says it's a hard place to raise a family.
My neighbors where this party went on, it hurts me to say I don't know them. But then when I first moved in, I don't know if they were gone somewhere or it was quiet. Our neighborhood was really quiet. And then I guess like they moved back. And then that's when I noticed there was drinking every weekend. Like even in the evenings, I could have visitors sitting here with me. My door will still stay locked.
Another neighbor agrees.
It's pretty quiet during daylight hours. There's not so much human traffic, if you want to call it that, but as soon as it starts getting dark, then there's a lot of activity going on. It's primarily a lot of youth, young adults, and amongst other people who are probably out partying. And generally, it starts run after supper and last right till in the morning sometimes.
The house where Warden went just before he was shot is at one end of the cul-de-sac. Police have raided the house at least twice in the last 2 years and found cocaine there each time. The woman who rents the house has been convicted of cocaine possession and is currently facing 2 cocaine trafficking charges. At the bottom of the cul-de-sac is another shortcut people use, through another hole in another fence, to get to the Rooster, a 24-hour variety store that's a popular all-night hangout. This neighborhood isn't the only place in town with drug and alcohol problems, but like the town itself, because the shooting happened here, it's come to be identified with them.
All right, thanks, buddy. Hey, Shane, I'm not open, but don't go anywhere. I'd love to chat with you guys.
A few blocks down the street, at the Hay River Youth Center, some kids have spotted Kevin Wallington's truck in the parking lot. The center used to be open at about this time, right after school, but the hours have been cut back.
So this is the original building here.
The center is looking for a new coordinator. It could be a long search. The salary is $36,000 per year, $1,000 more than Wallington was paid during the 4 years he ran the place. The annual budget is $80,000. That's for the coordinator, utilities, maintenance, everything. And it shows. There are holes worn through the duct tape used to patch the holes in the floor. A shattered window is taped over rather than replaced. The front door appears about to fall off its hinges.
You know, there's businesses that support this unbelievably. But I also think the condition speaks to a lot of people who have withdrawn from it and said, you know, this isn't our thing. These kids aren't our problem. They're somebody else's problem, which is why we have a youth center, so it doesn't have to be ours. And that's not said to be unfair to anybody in the community, because I know different people need to be focused on different things. But I really think that this speaks volumes to our kids as to where they sit on the ladder of importance in our community. And if that...
Despite its rundown appearance, young people flock to the center.
This place could be open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's always kids that need a place to stay, need a place to hang out, need a safe place to be. And, you know, if they know it's open and if they know someone is here that cares about them, they'll be here. And
Wallington says there's a handful of young people in the community who are addicted to crack cocaine. Alcohol, he says, is a much bigger problem among both youth and adults.
You know, there's a lot of harder drugs that haven't come to our community. And if we don't acknowledge that we need to protect the youth of our community, then we're just giving a wide open marketplace to these people who are coming from down south. And we see what kind of disregard they have for life to be dealing this and also to be coming in the community and doing the things that they are.
Back at the Boardroom Cafe, Beatrice Lapine says the community, in particular the courts, have to deal more harshly with drugs.
We need to get tough on those people that are dealing drugs, and that's the bottom line. Put them away for good long stretches and continue to do that until we make some impact. We've been too soft on crime for a long time. We've been too soft.
She hopes the cold-blooded murder of an RCMP officer has sparked something stronger than a passing interest in the community's drug and alcohol problems.
I just hope this issue doesn't disappear when the media interest is gone. Remember that officer we lost, and it was entirely preventable, I believe, you know. We need to remember him, remember Constable Christopher Warden and the sacrifice he and his family made for us.
Lapine and others say Warden's death should be a wake-up call for the community. They hope it will prod everyone here to make Hay River a better place for these children as they grow up. I'm Richard Gleason in Hay River.
Thanks for that report, Richard. While investigators are still trying to piece together what happened that fateful night, people in Hay River are trying to make sense of what happened themselves. Because, they say, they want to make sure it never happens again. The town's mayor and council called a meeting this week for people to air their concerns and to ask questions. More than 300 people showed up. Here's what some of them had to say.
My name is Duncan McNeil. In 30-some years of living in Hay River, I think there's only been 2 things that have truly assaulted me. A number of years ago, we had a sexual assault on a young girl going to school. And this month, we had a police officer who was murdered. Some say he was executed. People in authority know what's going on. Teachers know what's going on in the school, but I don't hear them speaking out. Maybe they're afraid to. Police officers find that it's a horrible burden to have to go after the street-level guys, when these guys walk half the time, or if they don't walk, they get what? A fine? Do you know how much profit there is in cocaine these days? Police officers tell me that where they used to be able to catch guys at the lower level and turn them, they can't anymore because the profits are so great that if you dare speak against your suppliers, you're liable to end up tied to a tree and burned to death. They don't dare. So what are we going to do about it? We're the ones that can have the backbone to stand up and say enough of this crap in our community. We're the ones who can say, I know somebody's dealing drugs, and we're going to hound them till they bloody well change or leave our community.
Hi, my name is Ann Lobb. I worked for the RCMP at this Hay River Detachment for 5 years. When I worked there, we were a 16-man detachment, and our population was a lot smaller than it is now. Our problems with alcoholism and drugs have gotten a lot worse, and yet we're a 9-man detachment. Why? My other question is, we've all heard over the radio that somebody was listening to the scanner that night, and that RCMP officer was out there for 45 minutes before backup arrived. The dispatcher from Yellowknife kept calling him and calling him, and he didn't answer. Why was he left out there for so long?
My name is Alec Kidzik, and I have two concerns in respect of the policing. The number one is, it's beyond me why we've tolerated for so long that it's after 4:30 or so, we phone the RCMP in any manner, and we have to get somebody from Yellowknife that fumbles for a half an hour to find out who we are and where we're calling from, number one. Number two, the other thing that really concerns me, that maybe we need to give more authority to the police as to how they go about things. Be it a bit rude from time to time, but we might be able to resolve something. This idea of handling everybody with kid gloves just doesn't work. There comes a time when you have to be firm. And with that much said, I just can't understand why Yellowknife gets everything and everybody else gets cut so bad to a detriment position.
Amen to that.
If I read the paper right, I understand you're going to Ottawa and hope to meet with the Prime Minister. And if that's being the case, can you meet with some justice ministers there and shake somebody up a little so we can get some changes to the number of RCMP we get?
Hi, my name is Darlene Lamb. I've lived here since I was 5. I have 4 daughters. 3 of them are teenagers. I just wanted to say, like, Constable Warden, I just wanted to say a word about him, because, excuse me if I cry. I had some problems with a couple of my teenagers, and Constable Warden and another officer took the time, their own time, to help me. And I really appreciate them for that, and I just wanted to let everybody know that the RCMP is here to help us, and they're not just out to get you for speeding tickets. They're actually putting their lives on the line, and I know a lot of people know that, but they also help parents if they're willing to ask for the help. Thank you.
My name is Christopher Gall. My wife and I moved here 5 months ago, and I'm a computer guy, so it's easy to find jobs in the cities where all this stuff's going on, but when I had an opportunity to come up here and work, my boss is here, so be careful. It wasn't the job that sealed the deal. As much as I love my job, it was the town. I'm used from cities where, you know, every place you are is like being in the elevator. Just you don't look at anyone, you don't talk to anyone. And it was bizarre. And it's wonderful now that we've gotten to understand it. In fact, we said that day, I said, well, I don't know who that nice old gentleman is, but we've seen him all over town. Everybody was red, I found out later. But everywhere we went, there he was. Hey, how are you kids doing? What do you need next? And now you've made this home for us. And damn it, I'm not moving again. So you've made me feel home here. So I'm challenging you to get together and stand up and fight for what you've got here. And I just hope, as an outsider perspective, to tell you what you do have here is unique, and it's worth fighting for. It's worth getting together.
Those were some of the people at the public meeting in Hay River this week to talk about the death of RCMP Constable Chris Warden. The meeting was followed by a vigil people carried hundreds of candles and roses to the RCMP detachment, where they prayed and had a moment of silence for Constable Warden. I'm Dave King. You're listening to The North This Week. And this just in, girls rule. That was the message at a girls-only conference in Yellowknife this week. Apparently, girl power isn't just for Spice Girls anymore. It's the power all girls have to make positive choices in their own lives. That was the theme at this YWCA event. About 60 girls from schools throughout Yellowknife had the chance to learn everything from jewelry making to self-defense. And CBC's Erin Ward dropped by to hear what they got out of the experience.
My name's Megan Stevens. I go to William McDonald School, and I'm in grade 8.
What did you just put in that box?
It's a survey thing of what happened today.
And what did happen today?
It's just about, like, it's the power of being a girl. We did, like, cooking, making earrings, do a scrapbook, what not to wear, belly dancing, and lots of stuff.
What was your favorite?
Doing the scrapbooking. It's just fun because you had to, like, design things and stuff. It's really, really cool.
What do you think the power of being a girl, what do you think that means?
That boys don't rule and girls rule. It's so true.
I'm Taryn Wentz, and I go to William McDonald Middle School.
And what was your favorite part of today?
My favorite part was making the earrings. It was really fun.
Can you describe your earrings for me?
Well, they're like skulls, and the eyes are two hearts. And the hearts are pink, and the skull is like gray. I like skulls.
You're so funny. I did Hello Kitty once.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet. Awesome. But my friend's wearing them right now, because I can't wear them. I'm allergic to them.
So what do you think the power of a girl, what do you think that means?
I think it means, like what Megan said, it's a, it's about girls drool and boys, like, suck. Okay, drool. But also it means that, like, people think that girls aren't as powerful as boys. So this is kind of saying that you are powerful and you can do things.
What do you think that you want to do in the future?
My like life goal is to like become a very famous actress and like be in an awesome movie that's really popular. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so fun.
Thanks very much. You're welcome.
I'm Caitlin. I go to Rains Lake and I'm in grade 8.
And so what did you do today?
I went to what mask do you wear, and like you make a mask and on the outside you say how like everybody sees you, then on the inside it says like what you are but nobody really sees it. And then I did Wanted One Great Friend, and you did a scrapbook and it said like stuff about you and how you're a good friend, and there's pictures and like you get to put stickers on it and everything, and you just like write who your friends are and stuff like that.
So what do you think makes you a good friend? What makes you a good friend?
I think this seems so grown up. Okay, I think that the thing that makes me a good friend is that I can keep a lot of good secrets and I'm easy to talk to because I understand and I give advice a lot. And the last thing I did was healthy relationships, and it's just like telling you not how to not get abused and stuff by your boyfriends. And we watched a video about how this guy was abusing his girlfriend, like physically, and he was trying to keep her away from her friends. Yeah.
So today was the power of being a girl. What do you think that means to you?
I think it just kind of means just to be strong being a girl today. I think it's just was kind of like how to make yourself feel good and everything without having a guy or something.
My name is Alex and I go to St. Joe's. I basically enjoyed the activities and it showed a lot of the power of a girl.
What does that mean to you?
It mostly means that we can do a lot and it shows a lot of confidence in yourself.
My name is Maggie Smith and I go to Mildred Hall School. I'm in grade 8.
Tell me about self-defense. Did you have to throw people around or what was that about?
Well, the instructor threw her dad around, which was the only male at the conference. I say he deserved it.
Why is that?
Because he's the only male at the conference.
And so this conference is about power of a girl. What do you think that means for you?
Like what we can do. Sometimes boys make us feel that we have no power. I think the point of this conference is to bring the power back.
Just some of the thoughts of some of the young women who attended the Power of Being a Girl conference at the YWCA in Yellowknife this week. And you know, once you are aware of your girl power, you can harness it to accomplish pretty much whatever you want. Just ask Alethea Arnakuk-Bahriel. She's encountering some pretty serious opposition, but it seems as though nothing will prevent her from realizing her dream of covering her face with a traditional Inuit facial tattoo. It used to be a pretty common thing for Inuit women to do, but the practice died out several generations ago. In the last few years, some women in Nunavut have started to revive traditional tattoo designs, but so far those designs have been confined to wrists and arms and other parts of the body. When Alethea gets her face tattooed this spring, she will become the only known living person with a traditional facial tattoo. Here's her story.
The first memory I have of seeing the tattoos is as a kid, you know, seeing it in a book. I thought it was so beautiful. And I remember wishing then that I could get those. Probably 4 or 5 years ago, I decided, well, I'm definitely going to get them, maybe when I'm older. A friend of mine said, why wait? And I didn't have an answer for her. People think, you know, don't ruin your face when you're younger. Wait till you're older, you're already old and wrinkly, you know. But I don't think it's ruining my face. I think they're beautiful. So, you know, I've realized that I don't have to wait. For the longest time, I dreamed that I would do it in the traditional way with the bone needle and the thread going under the skin, the thread dipped in the soot. I still kind of hope for that, you know, but it's risky if I decide in the end to go with modern technique. There's a guy, Mike Austin, who did a beautiful job. It will probably be someone like him. It's, you know, I trust what he's done. It's very good, beautiful.
My name's Mike Austin. I'm a tattooist, and I'm from London, Ontario. I've been a tattooist for about 20 years now. I've always been interested in various types of tattooing and different cultures, and that is what, I guess, led me to the Inuit tattooing. The way they apply them, or they applied them, is unique to any of the other cultures by the method they used of sewing them into the skin. That always made an impression with me.
It was a very painful thing, getting the tattoos in the traditional way, but that it helped women prepare for the pain of childbirth. You know, I'm getting married in April this coming year, planning to have kids pretty much immediately. And yeah, that's the reason I'm doing this now.
Alethea is interested in getting the facial tattooing done, and I'm really excited about that. I'm also very nervous about it as well, because in most places in the world, facial tattooing has a very negative connotation that comes with it. People make judgments of them, sometimes correctly too, that they may have a little bit of mental illness or they've been in jail. Generally, society will shun you if you have a face tattoo. However, in Inuit culture, it's the complete opposite. There was a time when everybody up here was tattooed. It was just part of everyday life.
I haven't told a lot of people yet. I'm a little nervous about that. Not even all of my family knows. My parents are really nervous and, you know, not so happy about me doing it. I think they worry about how people will react to me. Natural for a parent. I know some people will laugh and make fun. Oh, look at this crazy girl getting tattoos on her face. That's wild, you know.
I've never tattooed a face before, so I don't know what the skin is going to be like. Generally, when you tattoo, there's muscle mass underneath the skin, which makes it easy to tattoo. But when there's, like, you know, bone, like a skull right there, it'll be interesting to try it out. Also, it has to be perfect. I mean, because it's going to be on her face. Human faces are not symmetrical, and you have to take that into account when you're designing this. It's going to be a learning experience for me, but I'm very excited, and I'm also very honored to be able to do this.
I had one elder really unhappy with me for doing this, you know. She said, you know, no one will envy you. I know it's a touchy subject, but I think it's worth it doing it because I think they are beautiful, and I don't want to be intimidated by people. I think we should be allowed to embrace our own culture, our own traditions, and I think we shouldn't get bullied by people who, for whatever reasons they may have, think that it shouldn't happen. Kind of hoping that somebody might see that someone's done it. Maybe it's okay for me to do it too. And with youth becoming more and more interested in our history, I'd be surprised if they don't come back somewhat. But I've had to decide that even if I'm the only one that ever does it ever again, I'm happy with that.
That was Alethea Arnakuk-Bahriel, an artist and filmmaker in Iqaluit. She's producing a documentary about her own plans to have her face tattooed in the traditional Inuit style this coming March. We also heard tattooist Mike Austin in that piece. Thanks to CBC's Joanne Stassen for putting that together. This is The North This Week. I'm Dave King. Well, if the bra fits, wear it. That's not exactly how the saying goes, but it is Marty Derby's new mantra. You see, October is Breast Health Awareness Month, and to celebrate, women from throughout the Yukon got together for a great big Marty bra party last weekend. Most came in costume, with elaborately decorated bras. But Marty got to thinking that bras shouldn't just look good, they should fit well, too. So she stopped in to see Shayna McLean at Alpine's Bra Boutique for a professional fitting.
It took you a matter of seconds to let me know that the bra that I'm wearing isn't quite right. What are some of the common fit problems that you come across?
Well, there's a lot of different problems, and the number one thing is that 85% of all women are wearing the wrong bra, and for the majority of them, the bra is too big in the back, which is your band, and too small in the cups. So you have a lot of overflow in the front or under the sides of the arms. And then the back, it rides right up into your shoulder blades. There's just not enough tightness there to support the front.
How do you think most women actually feel about wearing bras?
Most women hate wearing a bra. It's a necessary evil in our society, but by and large, yeah, they're not overly comfortable. They don't always like the way that they fit, but they feel that they must wear one.
So you've picked some out for me. Are we going underwire or no underwire, and why?
Underwire for you because you're reasonably busty and you're looking for a good amount of support.
Yeah, indeed. I like the underwire because it's like, you know, getting that concrete foundation on the high rise, and high and rise is what we're going for here.
Yes, you definitely do like a concrete foundation, and that's really what you want for the majority of your clothing, is you want a really good foundation, and then you can worry about the details of it after you have that.
Now, one thing I've noticed on this first bra is it's actually larger than what I'm wearing now, so I think I'm going to look bigger. Why can't I just go a lot smaller and squish everything in?
Because you're going to be squishing everything in. And if we're going to talk healthy breasts, we want really good blood flow, really good lymphatic flow, fluids in general. We really don't want to be squishing all the breast tissue so that we're not going to have great flow.
Does that mean if I'm an A or a small B, I don't have to wear a bra?
No, it doesn't. Support is great. Gravity will take hold if you do not wear a bra.
Okay, so I imagine I've got this one. Is there a right way to put a bra on?
Loading. Loading your bra is very important, and there are some right ways and some wrong ways, but the big question is doing the twist, that's doing the bra up in the front and twisting it around yourself, is that wrong? Some fitters tell you absolutely that's wrong, you can't do it. I say if it gets the bra on, then do it. It's fine. It's comfortable. Your straps are another thing. A lot of women really tug and pull at the strap. Use your opposite hand. Pull the strap up over the elbow and onto your shoulder, and do not do the chicken.
Well, as you can see, I am a twister, but is there a position? Should I be standing up straight as I load the bra?
You should be bent forward as you actually are putting your breasts into the cups. Bending forward is a gravity issue. It allows you to put the fullest amount of bust into the fullest part of the cup. Therefore, everything should be in its own compartment.
Okay, we'll load it up and get ready to go here. This, a lot of separation. Everything's high, pointing forward. It actually is quite slimming when you look from the front.
It is, and that's the optical illusion, basically. We really do want the separation for the most part. We want to have two breasts, not the uni-boob, and certainly not four or six boobs. But it is rather slimming, and especially if you don't go super round, depending on your structure. Super round can make you look a lot wider, whereas separation and a slightly pointy look, not super pointy, no Madonna boobs, will actually make you look thinner, because oncoming traffic, they're not seeing the whole portion of it. It is a slimmer look.
The issues that I have with this bra, first of all, I can't see my toes. I like to be active, and I find it's a little bouncy, but, well, it's slimming from the front. It's got to go somewhere, so I sort of feel like I have little bazookas from the side. Can I be, like, intrinsically more of a setter than a pointer and still get a good fit?
You can. We just have to find a different bra for you and for your structure. Height plays a huge part into this right now, and you are on the compact side of things. So we have to find something that's a slightly more compact bra, a little bit more of the over-the-shoulder boulder holder than today's styles.
You're saying I want my grandma's bra.
You kind of like your grandma's bra. You do. But that's okay. That's your personal style, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, because when you are very, very comfortable and you still have the health of your breasts in mind, there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, we've tried on a few, and I found what I like, a nice, comfy sports bra. Why is this a good fit for me?
This is a good fit because we've managed to find almost all of the support that you were looking for. We have not squished any of your breast tissue underneath your arms, so you are compact. We have a nice wide band, so you have a lot of support through the back, which will now support the bust in the front and not put a lot of pressure on your shoulders.
I'm happy with this, and I'm going to take it, and I want to thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
It's always good to get a little support from your friends.
Yes, it is.
Shana McLean is with Alpine's Bra Boutique. Thanks to CBC's Marty Derby for bearing almost all for that story. That's it for The North This Week. We bear it almost all every day on our website. That's at cbc.ca/north. You'll find a roundup of stories from across the North there. And if there's a story we've missed that you would like to hear, or you've got a question about the program, send me an email at dave_king@cbc.ca. And as always, if you're in the North, you can tune us in on your radio dial. My name's Dave King. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.